Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 3rd of February 2013. My name is TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James, Nick from Partially Obstructed View, and Web Cowgirl. We're now going to talk about Diane, Viv and Rose, which is on the main stage at the Hampstead Theatre. This play by Amelia Bullimore and directed by Anna McMinn was previously downstairs at Hampstead, and it, as such, wasn't reviewed by national critics, although I think at the time we talked about it last year. It's held over just one member of the cast, the three women cast from the first production. The first production had Claudie Blakely and Nicola Walker, and Tamsin Outhwaite, who's come over to be in it with Anna Maxwell Martin and Gina McKee, taking over from the other two. This production, I mean, it's opened out a lot more. It's fairly the same, I think. There are parts where people are talking on the telephone, which is done much more clearly. They can change the set much more easily upstairs than they could downstairs. So it works much better as in larger space. But it's not really that much different from the first one. I mean, everything's the same. I felt everything was the same, although apparently there has been one extra scene written, or part of one extra scene written for it, and I have to say I didn't notice which one it was. This play is about three women who meet as students. One is fairly well off and is able to gets a flat paid for by her stepfather. Well, it's a small house, and they live in it together in Manchester, at University of Manchester. And we see them becoming really good friends, and how that friendship gets tried and tested over the next 20 or so years. It's a good play. I have a little bit of problems. I just didn't think I'm quite the right sex to appear to like all of it. I said that to someone the other day, and he told me I was a terrible sexist misogynist. So obviously I'm completely in the wrong here. But I just feel it's slightly more aimed at women than men. And certainly last year when it was being done, A lot of really positive comments were coming from sort of women bloggers, and not quite so much from the men. Now, Gareth, what did you think of this play?
Well, I absolutely loved the play. At the beginning, I wasn't convinced I was going to, because the first part is this kind of very staccato, almost like sound bites in front of a screen, where they just kind of introduce the characters, really. But once that scene is over and they move into the kind of core of the play, which is the scene where they're sharing a house at university, then I really kind of got into it very, very quickly, really. I mean, it's a play about friendship, and there aren't really that many plays about friendship. I tell you, the sign of a good play for me was that we went out in the interval, and I actually couldn't wait to go back. I just wanted the interval to be over, because I was really so enjoying the company of these women that I really wanted to go straight back. And that's, I think, has very rarely happened to me, really. I'm a bit puzzled by this male-female thing, because I think it could be, you know, it could be male friendships, really, I think. And what's interesting about the critics, for me, of this particular version of it is that the women critics are more negative of it than the male critics. So I wonder whether whether sort of women actually see it as being a bit sort of patronizing to them in a way. And I personally didn't feel, you know, my sex was an issue in watching the play. I thought it was very well written. It turned corners after the sort of the main scene. It turns some quite surprising corners. It moves on about another 20 years. And, of course, the actresses are all 30-something, 40-somethings, and they are effectively playing 18 to 22 in the first act. They're playing much younger, but then later they're playing more true to their age. And I actually thought that worked very well, because I don't honestly think that young actors would be able to portray this play as well as these three actresses were, because they were three absolutely cracking performances, I thought. Gina McKee, Anna Maxwell Martin, and Tamsin Outhwaite. And I think what I particularly liked about it was that the chemistry between them was quite palpable, that the performance stroke actress blurred, really. I mean, to the point where these just could quite well have been three women who lived this all these lives, really. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's one of the most enjoyable evenings I've had in the theatre for some time. I'm sure it's going to be highlight of the year. And it would not surprise me one iota if it doesn't find its way into the West End.
Yeah, I think that I think it might be fair that the I don't know why people would attack it. I mean, I have I had slight reservations about it, but I think it's a very good play. But it's just that, you know, it was only that it didn't quite appeal to me. I think that it's rather surprising to hear that some of the female critics might have been worse than the men, but it's a bit odd.
Yeah, well, the Sundays. Today, I think both the Independent on Sunday, Kay Bassett and Susanna Clapp were just okay about it, or perhaps it was last Sunday in the case of Susanna Clapp. Maybe the course is just the individuals and not, maybe we're generalising too much about one sex liking and one sex not liking it, really. But it's, for me, very, very enjoyable.
We're now going to talk about One Monkey Don't Stop No Show at the Tricycle Theatre. This is a play by Don Evans and is based in 1970s Philadelphia. Gareth, could you tell us more about this play?
Well, the play is really about a couple of middle-class black social climbers, Myra and Avery, whose lives are kind of turned upside down by two things, really. One is that their son develops a relationship with a girl from the wrong side of town, and the other is that a teenage relative who visits starts a dubious relationship with a club owner, because the club owner is, in fact, her guardian now that her father and his boss has actually died. So it's a kind of fairly light rom-com, really, but with some satire in it, I think, some sort of period satire. They've built it. The company themselves have built it as a cross between The Cosby Show and Restoration Comedy, which I think is actually quite an accurate piece of billing, really. And they've decided to stage it as if we were attending the recording of this as a TV show. So you enter in and there's sort of countdown to the start and there's a big red on-air sign and the actors come in and are introduced as actors to the audience to canned laughter. And I think that's quite a clever idea because it is 30 years old or 40 years old. It's 40 years old, and I think that it would be less palatable for a modern audience if it were sort of played straight. The Restoration Comedy reference is quite interesting because, in fact, I think he might have had this in mind when he wrote it, because he wrote the character of Myra with malapropisms, so she actually does exactly what Mrs. Malaprop does in The Rivals, and gets her things jumbled up, her words jumbled up. It's performed, it's kind of quite a broad performance. It's a very, very sort of cartoonish carry-on style, really, and I felt sometimes they pushed that just a bit too far. The actress that played Myra and the actor that played the son Felix, I thought, just pushed it a little bit too far. But it is, you know, it's basically, you know, it's a fun, you know, it's a fun, it's a comedy, and it's done with much brio, really. So an unusual evening, I think, for the Tricycle, which we're more used to seeing sort of political things, and I think quite refreshing in a way to see them sort of to put something like this on. It certainly drew a very, very diverse audience the night I went, which I thought was great, and there were lots of people there who I got the clear feeling didn't go to the theatre that much and were sort of whooping and whatever and enjoying themselves immensely, which I think's which is a great thing. So an enjoyable evening, not sort of an interesting, I think a fascinating period piece and an enjoyable evening, but not more than that. I think I wouldn't sort of say this was in any way groundbreaking or innovative or special, but an interesting piece, unlike I think anything I've seen before, really.
Nick, what did you think about it?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I mean, on the subject of it being kind of a change for the Tricycle, I mean, Indira Basingham has said that it is a deliberate change of direction, that you're not going to be seeing the political theatre there anymore now that she's taken over. She said it's because she doesn't want to compete with Nicholas Kent's 20-something year tenure in that. She says she can't, she's going to set off in a different direction, which is more specifically multicultural. I don't know whether also there's an element of knowing that they've lost quite enough funding by being anti-establishment as it is, so they might want to look elsewhere. But I know that was largely the reason he left in the first place. But yeah, generally, I agree with what you said. I agree. There's certainly, it is quite accurate billing that it is a cross between sitcom and restoration comedy. There is, yeah, the obvious kind of malapropisms of Jocelyn G. Essien's character, and even the story that is kind of feels a bit creepy of the of the girl who falls in love with her guardian, who I kind of got the feeling that her dad had kind of, who for some reason was never anywhere near her, had been writing letters to her for years, and I kind of got the feeling that her dad had been setting her up to fall in love with him. He'd kind of decided this was a good guy for her, and so I think she was kind of destined for that. That kind of feels it's one of those things that feels kind of icky until you kind of put it in a restoration comedy context, and it feels like the sort of thing that, yes, that is kind of like the plot of a restoration comedy. Kind of, let's make sure you marry your cousin or your guardian, or so it is a bit easier to take in that context. I'm not sure whether kind of the things that might be more offensive nowadays would be worse off in the sitcom without the sitcom setting. I think sometimes I actually thought, I was surprised how well it worked, because it is a very particular style to impose on a play that wasn't necessarily written that way, although I can see where you might get the idea for it, because certainly that you've got this kind of middle-class black family who has a niece coming from somewhere else and kind of disrupting their pretensions of who they are. And I didn't so much think of the Cosby Show as the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air as being a very similar kind of initial setup. So I could see why you'd go for a sitcom style just off of that. I really liked the performances. I thought they were very accurate to sitcom, and I think that's one of the few things that did make it a problem for me, is that by the time you get into the interval, you become very aware that American TV and all TV sitcoms, and you know, right from The Cosby Show to The Fresh Prince and everything that's on today, last for 30 minutes. I think you become very aware that actually there's a certain, they're emulating the style of it a bit too well, because by a certain amount of time you go, okay, there's a reason the credits come in after 30 minutes, because it's quite an over-the-top style to sit through for 2.5 hours. And I think some of the more serious scenes kind of didn't quite fit into the style. But like I say, apart from those couple of things, I was surprised at how well it worked. Yeah, I would recommend it as a fun evening out. As you say, I don't think it doesn't feel particularly groundbreaking now, but it's quite surprising that it's never made it over to the UK so far. I think it was actually in 1981, although it does feel very a few years earlier than that. So I think it's 30 years old, but I am surprised. 1982, the copyright is. So yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't in some form come over here before, but I suppose some of these things fall down the cracks, and it was worth bringing over here, better late than never.
Going back to this point about the Tricycles policy, I mean, they didn't originate this production. This is a touring company called, is it Eclipse or something? Yeah. And in fact, I wonder whether it wasn't in any way made for the Tricycle, because the set itself doesn't really fit. It sort of spills over on both sides. And although that kind of suits the conceit, I don't think it was made for the Tricycle Theatre. I think it would be a great shame if she moves completely away from the sort of work the Tricycle's been done in the past, and I'm not sure that they've been singled out for funding reduction because of it. I understand why Nicholas Kent was upset at the funding changes, but I mean, you know, without that, I mean, London's going to be really missing something very important. I mean, it's been, you know, and it's been important on a world stage. I mean, this is the theatre that actually performed in the Pentagon for a bunch of generals who turned around and said, we wish we'd seen this before we went to Afghanistan. I mean, you know, this is a theatre that's world class, and it would be a huge shame if they moved completely away from that. And she actually herself has been involved in some of that writing, because I think that the play about the series of 8 plays about women and women in politics was, I think, her. I mean, she actually took over.
Yeah, I think she originated that. I think she co-directed with Kent a lot of the other kind of collections of plays that they did on that style, and I think that one was one that she herself originated as well, off the back of that, yeah.
I think there's room, you know, there's room for this, but there's also room for the other stuff as well. I just hope I mean, if the Tricycle were to be a series of plays like this, then God forbid, you know, that would be just such a shame, really. But if the Tricycle, you know, adds this kind of play into their repertoire and becomes more varied, more diverse, that's absolutely fine. I just hope she doesn't move completely away.
No, I mean, the first one in this kind of policy was Red Velvet, which again was kind of particularly about race in some ways. And I didn't see their Christmas show was the Arabian Nights, but then their last show in the current season is going to be something about I think it's Thai Ladyboys or something. So there is kind of a particularly international style coming in. That, you know, she has obviously, but again, that might be a first season thing of kind of. I think that does happen a lot, is people trying to make sure they've put their own stamp on things, and then they can embrace kind of a bit more. Yeah. Things that used to happen before. I certainly don't think those two policies are mutually exclusive. I certainly don't think multiculturalism and politics are mutually exclusive. So I think that there is scope for it to go back into that sort of area.
I have to say, I think the idea of Filipino ladyboys acting as carers for Orthodox Jewish men and having a drag act in their spare time is quite enticing. I think it'd be hard to miss that, really.
We're now going to talk about Port, which is on at the Littleton Theatre. It is a Simon Stevens play from, I believe, 2002, about a young girl growing up in Stockport. We start in 1988 with her in the back of her, in the front of her, car, her mother's car, having been locked out of their flat by their drunken father, and it goes on fitfully through. About 2 year increments for the next 13 years, and we see her growing up. We have a quite remarkable performance from Cato Flynn, who does a very very believable growing up from sort of 11 to 23 during the play, or 24, and it is actually quite a remarkable transformation, because she's on the stage all the time. She's literally just changing her clothes and altering her hair slightly, and I thought that was the most impressive part of it. Although I liked the play, I did have other slight problems. I thought that the her life, the too much in too many things which are not properly explained about her life, especially later on when she gets married, and that just comes out of absolutely nowhere, and you just don't quite see why that would have happened, and some of her relationships, you don't quite see why they worked or they didn't work, and there are odd little bits like that. But I thought this was a rather impressive piece. Webb Calgill, what did you think about this?
There's a sort of play that seems to be quite popular in the UK. The style that I refer to is miserabilism. During this play, you watch people who basically have had a rough time of life, not enjoy themselves, and then have things get worse. This play, to me, had that kind of a feel to it. I thought the acting was uniformly very, very good, but I did not enjoy watching it, and I found myself bored and drifting frequently at the scenes, which seemed to sort of run on and not really have any point. And I felt like, insofar as we might have created a plot, there was no plot to be seen. And while I could admire the various components that had come together and were being presented as Port, I was glad to leave at the end, because I was tired of being around the characters, and I no longer wanted to be watching what they did in their life, although I will say Kate's performance was really extraordinarily good. But I didn't like what she was doing as a character, and I think the play is too long and frustrating, and that they're going to have a lot of discount ticket offers.
Nick, what did you think about it?
I have a term for that sort of thing as well. I call it misery porn, which I actually, this isn't quite, but it's for me. Edward Bond, I think, writes misery porn. but this closely borders on it. It doesn't quite get to it. What I find hilarious is Simon Stevens repeatedly going on about how he's looked back at it and seen, oh, it's such an optimistic play. I've lost that optimism. I need to go back to it. I mean, if you lived in Stockport, it was certainly wouldn't be an optimistic play, because he's very much saying the only way not to be miserable for the rest of your life is to get the hell out of there. And I think that's the other thing that his interviews have been doing a bit, is a certain amount of backtracking and making sure he doesn't get lynched next time he goes back to his hometown, and saying he's been back there and it's much nicer now. I kind of would call it a curate's egg, which in its structure, the play of his that it reminded me of most was Harper Regan, because it again has, I think that play was, it was a slightly older woman, but the period of time was shorter, but it was still a woman at the centre going on a journey. I think it was more of a geographical one there, and meeting different people and the influence and what happened with that and where it took her life. And I think, again, that was one I referred to as a curate's egg, because there's things in there that really stand out. There's two scenes in particular, which are the scenes between Kate O'Flynn and Callum Callahan, who plays the guy who clearly she's meant to end up with but never does, the kind of the guy who could maybe make things better for her there, but as has been said before, suddenly in the next scene she's married to someone else who's appeared out of nowhere. And then the second scene between the two is kind of a couple of years down the line, when with the kind of the regrets of the relationship that never really happened. And I think those two scenes are absolutely stunning. And the chemistry between the two of them is fantastic, and they're two very good actors who they're both kind of actors who I've seen in a lot of coming up very gradually in the last few years. It's one of those things of you kind of expect them to explode at some point, but you never know who's going to really make it like that. But they're both actors who I've seen in things and kind of enjoy their performances in recent years, and together they really spark off each other. But yes, the whole play is problematic to me, and it is it's too long. I mean, like almost everything at the National, it runs 20 minutes longer than advertised. I do actually wonder whether they know what the words including interval means, because I could swear they expect you to add the interval time onto the running time.
I can say at least that it did end pretty much when it said it was going to the night that I saw it, and that was a blessing.
I think I saw it after you, but maybe there was something else up. But I certainly in the cast sheet it said it was going to run for 2:20 and it ran for 2:40.
You hear about those two scenes actually being amazing. I think there was a lot of memorable scenes in here, as well as the ones that weren't memorable. But the other, I actually also thought the scene of her with the husband was one of the most accurate depictions of violence on partners that I actually don't think I've ever really seen that on stage, feeling so real before.
Mm. No, it's very well acted, and I think those three actors, Jack Deem is the one who plays. I think there's a certain point being made, because he plays both her father and the drunken abusive husband. So I think there is a point being made about her marrying someone who's exactly like her father. But yes, they are. I mean, it is a good cast, but those three do absolutely stand out. One thing that did in the performances, and I don't think it's really the performers' fault, because they almost all did it, is the early scenes, is the ones where they were playing children, and even when they were into kind of their mid-teens, I found the performances a little bit too broad and a little bit. It's really hard to describe. I kind of feel of it as patronising a bit. I think it's very much playing children, and forgetting kind of the fact that children don't think they're kids. They don't think they're cute kids. They think they're clever and grown up. And I think possibly because I'd seen Gruesome Playground Injuries the night before, which has some very nice performances of adults playing quite young kids at times, I think it really struck me that actually there was just something a little bit off. There was something a little bit too, not cutesy is not really the word, because of the context.
Self-conscious.
Yeah, well, I don't even know about if it's that. I think it's just played a little bit too broad. And then somewhere in kind of the mid-teenage scenes, I think it is when Callum Callahan arrives as the love interest that sadly never goes anywhere, he kind of has more of a kind of genuine kind of teenage thing. This is the thing, I think it's when it's kind of getting into the mid-teens and they're still kind of being a bit childish, it's like, God, that's, no, the teenagers desperately don't want to be childish. They want to be, you know, it's a bit like the thing about drunk acting. You don't act drunk, you act like you're trying desperately to stay on your feet. You don't act like you want to fall over.
You don't feel right. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, the scenes with the actors playing kids were just like fingernails on a chalkboard for me. If they had cut like pretty much the entire first scene, he was not a believable little boy. And no. Her character, maybe she would, I don't know if you thought she was a believable 11-year-old girl, but if I'd been her mom, I would have smacked her a lot sooner.
I mean, like I say, I think Kate O'Flynn's fantastic, but even she, I think, over-egged it a bit, which is, I mean, it was an overall thing, so I think it might have been Marianne Elliott maybe letting them go a bit broader than they should have. I don't think it was necessarily the actors to blame. I think it, because it, some of these things, when you see everybody doing it, you kind of think, well, I can't really point my finger at the actors because they're, you know, it's, I've seen them be too good in other things to think that this is just them. I think the director needed to kind of pull them back a little bit, which he didn't. But worth mentioning the set, I think, which is one of those classic kind of Littleton clever set changes. It's Lizzie Clacken doing this one, and the basic set is very it's like it felt like a concrete tomb to me. So it's definitely feeding into the general theme of don't come in here expecting sunshine and lollipops.
So since you guys are locals and I'm not, was life in, I don't know to what extent Stockport is like other towns that aren't London, like if it's like Manchester and Birmingham, if it's a particularly bad place, but was life in the early 90s really as bad as that with kids just like regularly, you know, vandalizing and stealing things just for kicks? Because to me, it was like an England on the verge of pure anarchy. And, you know, I grew up pretty poor in America, and poor kids, I never heard of poor kids just going in for, you know, vandalism and busting out shop windows down the street one after another for kicks.
I think this sort of thing happens and has always happened. I mean, there is a certain sort of breakdown in society that people have noticed, and it's been going on for quite some time. And especially with things in the late 80s, I mean, things like the, I think things like the miners' strike and the poll tax riots, they in sort of the late 80s, they kind of made it acceptable to go on a bit of a rampage. And there were certainly some of the riots of the early 1980s in towns. There was that idea that if you get upset with things, you go out and you start throwing stuff. There was that feel, and I think that that's what he's reflecting there. That, you know, that feel that sort of disaffected youth can just go out on the rampage. It doesn't happen that much in America, I know, but it is something that has sort of grown up throughout Britain, I think. I mean, I think we are naturally anarchistic in this country, perhaps.
It's also a particular size of town as well. It's kind of it's a mid-sized town, isn't it? It's not it's not somewhere like London or Manchester, so there it will have more of a claustrophobic feel to it. But I didn't actually move to the UK until the mid 90s, so I'll have to. I certainly get that impression, but I wasn't here to actually confirm or deny whether things were like that. I didn't grow up in this country, so.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are ayu-londontheatre.org, and the podcast can also be found both on iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.